Good Sunday evening. It is the 22nd of September, and it is the first day of fall here. And Kathy, you are back in the studio with us again tonight.
It's good to be back. We've taken a little break, but here we are, ready to hit the floor running, y'all.
And so who do we have as our guest this evening?
We have as our guest this evening, Melinda Zapata. So we want to welcome her to the show. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And right now, Melinda was wearing a lot of different hats. So we're going to talk a little bit about, of course, we always start off with family history. And then we're going to talk about her job at Community Action. Do they still say Community Action Inc.?
Community Action Inc. of Central Texas, yes.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about that and talk a little bit about the anniversary that Community Action has coming up. And then we're going to talk about a little project that she has going on called The Nutty Cucumber.
Yeah.
And it's a food blog. So, yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun today.
The Nutty Cucumber, that just sounds fun.
It is fun. So, I think it is fun.
So, yes, you got a lot to cram in the next hour here.
So we're going to go ahead and get started, and we're going to talk a little bit about her family history, where she's from, how she got to San Marcos, and if she knows where her ancestors came from. Well, we might be able to hear that too, and then we'll talk a little bit about her family.
Okay. Well, I'll start with my grandparents on both my parents' side. I think we're Texas, pretty much purebred Texans. I can't really find my grandfather on my mom's side. I believe his family moved from Illinois in the 30s, but everyone else, we really don't know when we came to Texas. It's probably in the 1800s, way back. So both my parents are from West Texas, one far West Texas, a little farther West Texas than the other. Mom is from the Monahans, Odessa area, and my dad was from the Abilene area, a little plain town called Cross Plains. They met at Sol Ross State University. My dad was a football player. Funny story about that. He was in the Navy and decided to get a football scholarship and came to San Marcos, which is funny. You know, you fast forward 50 years and here I am in the town that he wasn't too crazy about. Met up with Coach Jowers, who was the coach. We've got a building named after him, and tried to get a scholarship. He said he didn't give me the time of day or nothing. So to moving forward, he got a scholarship at Sol Ross at Alpine, and they were in the same conference, and he intercepted a pass and beat the Bobcats. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, Dad, you know, you're like, yeah. But it was confirmed. He said, and I went and I threw him the football. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if I believe that part. But we did later on. My parents graduated from Sol Ross. They were both teachers. And they moved to Bandera and then Flatonia, Texas, which is about 50 miles from here. And coaching wasn't for him, but they really liked the little town. It's a town of about 1,200. It's been steady. It stayed 1,200 all these years. And he moved on and worked there. My mom taught school. His dad was a peanut farmer and in West Texas or in Abilene area, and my mom's dad's parents were oil filled, so they moved all over, but ended up in Flatonia, Texas, which a lot of kids from Flatonia come to Southwest, and I was one of them. I came on the scene in 1985, and was an elementary, education major. But that's kind of as far as history goes. Ancestry, we have traced back maybe to Scotland and Ireland, but pretty far back. Other than Illinois, I don't really have. And that is something that, when you and I were talking and thinking about that, I don't really know a lot about that. And that's unfortunate that I didn't. My parents have both passed on, and I don't really, I have cousins and, other relatives that I think know a little bit more than I do. So I would always encourage, hey, have those conversations with your parents when you can. They know a little bit more than, having to go back to your cousins, or I guess now there's so much more you can do just to learn your ancestry.
Yeah, there are a lot of things out there now that we didn't have, maybe even 10 years ago. But yeah, I think if you do it, you're going to find you're probably going to like it, and sometimes you won't be able to stop doing it, because sometimes the more you learn, the further you want to dig.
Yes.
So, when you do have time, I would recommend that you try to do that.
Yes, it's on my list. for sure. I've gotten, you know, like I said, I've got a cousin who definitely knows a little bit more than I do and has shared different things. But again, yeah, there's a lot more that I know that I can learn from that, for sure.
And so how did you decide to come to school here in San Marcos over at I guess at the time, was that still Texas State University?
No, it was Southwest. So 1985 was definitely SWT. I was an elementary education major, and that was just, you know, one of the schools that was well known for elementary education majors. And I think I was like a lot of kids now, or even for sure back, I don't think we knew what we wanted to do. And it was, but you know, hey, you can't be going to school forever. You're going to need to pick a major. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing that came to mind. Like, I'll do that. But I fell in love with San Marcos from the right then and there, just because of, just the diversity that it has. Even I know with the university that probably helps, you know, helps with that. But I, you know, worked part-time. I always worked part-time. And when education wasn't really my thing, I taught school for 3 years and then went into the nutrition. I got another
a secondary degree
in nutrition in 92. And so during that is how I came, you know, came into what I'm doing right now.
So did you teach school here in the school district?
No, I taught school in South San Antonio ISD. So it was a commute. It was a very long commute. But I think just, you know, it's hard to leave San Marcos, you know, when once you've, you know, living here. And we did move. I lived for 1 year in San Antonio just because the commute got too hard. But then when I decided that, you know, I wanted to go back to school, I, you know, came back. I was in the U.S. Army Reserves, for 6 years.
Something I didn't know about you.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't know that. Yeah, it was really, you know, to help with school, because that second time around, my parents were like, yeah, you know, we helped you the first time, but you're going to have to figure it out on your own. And then when I did that, they didn't like, you know, weren't too crazy about that. But that was the pre-Iraqi war, so made it a little bit, you know, less scary, mm-hmm. you know, for them. But it was in between the two, so they you know, were not happy with that, now that I remember my dates. But once I came back here, we never did leave. Both my kids were born and raised, born in San Antonio, just mainly because of insurance, you know, mm-hmm. where the hospitals sure. were.
So now you're married, you've got children. Your husband's name is Bubba. How I know. What's his real name?
Robert. Yes, Robert. Yeah, he's not Roberto. I think he's named after Bubba Smith, the football player. You know, Bobby, his grandmother, you know, called him Bobby. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, that was a nickname for sure. Mm-hmm. But his dad started calling him Bubba, and it stuck. And it stuck since.
So did you meet him here in San Marcos, or where'd you meet him?
I met him at Oyster Bake.
Yes, St. Mary's.
Ooh. Yes, at St. Mary's. Yeah, 1990, I was teaching school in San Antonio, and I had never been to Oyster Bake or the whole Fiesta thing, you know. I was like, I'm just going to go check it out. And I was a big fan of Bad Mother Goose, which is the reggae band that, you know, and I just read an interesting article on that singer. That's like another story. But this was, you know, in the mid-80s that they really were popular in San Marcos, and they played all the festivals, you know, around that time. And I was like, I'm just going to go. And I thought that I was going to meet my friend at the Taste of New Orleans, which is at Sunken Gardens. Mm-hmm. And I thought I could walk. And I was on the bus, and I was telling someone, you're not walking. Do you know how far that is? I'm like, no, I don't. So I'm like, okay, well, it looks like I'm stuck here, and, you know, call a cab. And I saw my high school friend, who we went to college here in San Marcos. We were roommates. And I saw her walk by. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, that's crazy. Like, my ride, I found my ride. And Bubba was with her. They were friends, and they had just come. He's from San Antonio, or his dad was Air Force. Mm-hmm. But, he called San Antonio home. And they were together, or, you know, they weren't on a date, but they were just there, you know, to see Bad Mother Goose. Mm-hmm. And after that, yeah, that was it. We saw Stevie Ray Vaughan at La Semana Alegre. That was April 1990, so he died in August of 1990. So we saw one of his probably last, I guess, Texas shows maybe, but fun times. Yeah, that's how we met. And then we married in 94.
And so were you guys living in San Antonio when
you
married?
So, no, we were living here. He was here at school, but he was a little bit after. He had started school a little bit later. Mm-hmm. We were the same age, but just started school a little bit later. And I took a trip to Europe, my big trip, you know, that I saved and saved. And but we made it through that 8 weeks, you know. I'm like, I'm going. I mean, just met him, and I was like, I'm going. But came back and moved to, lived in San Marcos. That's when I was commuting to South San, and just, that was too far. And I met a girl during, I worked at a camp in Western Pennsylvania during college, and met a girl from Arizona, and she was going into dietetics. And I just had never thought of it, you know, but going, I mean, it's really no fault of anybody, but I think growing up in a small town, we didn't really have a lot of counselors that were going to talk to you about what you wanted to do, what your interest. I've always liked cooking. I've cooked ever since I could, but it's just, oh wow, you can major in that, or you can like go into that. So I think, but meeting somebody, she kind of talked to me, and she goes, you can still do it, like you're not that old. I'm like, okay, well, then that just became, well, I just need to make the move and figure out how I'm going to pay for it.
Yeah, it's amazing how when you have conversations with other people, how sometimes your mental way of thinking can change.
Mm-hmm. Like, you never thought, I'm like, I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's funny because she's not even in the field anymore. She got her RD. I'm not an RD. She went through and got her RD and worked a little bit and then went into something else. So it's like, that's interesting how that worked out. But I did about 2 years, and that's when I became introduced to Community Action in 1992, was when I applied for a part-time position and got it. So while I was in nutrition, it was still Southwest Texas. Texas State was even after, that was even, like, I was Southwest both times. Both times, yeah.
And so now you're here in San Marcos, you're married with a family. Tell me a little bit about your children.
So I have two kiddos. They are Noel and Aaron. My son Noel is just turned 29, and my daughter Aaron just turned 26. So we were new, we decided we wanted to live in San Marcos. I, you know, kind of had dreams of moving around like a gypsy around the planet. My husband was military, Bubba was military, and he, of course, was used to that. And so, you know, we kind of had a compromise, and I didn't want to, you know, San Marcos is to me the perfect place, 50 miles from Flatonia, you know, 35 miles from his parents. So it was close enough to go for the day, or, you know, for them to come visit us. Plus, you know, San Marcos is just a cool town. There was a lot of folks we were already meeting that we had met that had come to school here and, you know, seemed to mesh really well with the locals.
And it was still small enough that you didn't have to gripe about anything.
No, there was no traffic. Even my kids now can't believe how much it's changed. But I worked at 7-Eleven. My mom didn't like that job, so I had to quit. But while I was working there, this was 1985, 86, a guy came through. He goes, I haven't been here since 1950. And I'm thinking, you old guy. Now I can't believe how many things I say about it. It makes me think of that guy. It's like, I could have at least like been nicer to him.
And you're
you
like, welcome to non-heaven anymore.
Right. So I'm sure it was crazy different, but it's like, wow, what it is now. But they both, you know, Bubba worked for the city of San Antonio. So our insurance, you know, they were born in San Antonio, but we were living here. They both graduated from San Marcos High School. They both live in Austin. I have a great, you know, story for San Marcos, just education. I would get very, you know, defensive when people are like, well, I'm moving my kids over to New Braunfels or Wimberley. I'm like, we live here, though. We need to support our school. And Noel graduated 16th in his class. Another funny story with that one is that I was 16 in my class. And I would say, oh, really? And they're like, wow, you're really smart. And only my friends from Flatonia would know we had 35 people in our class. And you're bad. I wasn't a very good high school student. But Noel was, you know, he was able to get into UT. And it was a math major. And he said first semester was a review. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, we need to get that out there. You know, we're not perfect, right. But we're also, you know, we've got some good stories to share.
Well, we can at least say you're in the top 50% of your class. Well, I think we're going to go for a station break right now, and then we'll be back.
And you're listening to Rises here on a Sunday night on KCSM 104.1 LP San Marcos, Texas 78666. And just as a reminder, the views expressed on this radio show are those of the hosts, the guests, and not necessarily those of KCSM or SMTX CRA. We're going to be right back with you after a few brief announcements.
Nosotros aquí en KZSM, su radio comunidad, les invitamos a participar en servir nuestra comunidad. Experiencia en radio no es necesario. Nosotros los entrenamos si quisiera ser locutor o ingeniero de programa, pero también necesitamos gente con experiencia de varias habilidades. Si quisiera saber más, se puede ponerse en contacto con nosotros en la página web en kzsm.org o por correo a 216 Norte Guadalupe Street, San Marcos, Texas, 78666, o ven a visitarnos en el estudio. Este es su radio comunidad. Venga y ser parte de ella. El colectivo de salud de mujeres del Hill Country ofrecemos una clínica gratis de mujeres. Ahorita ofrecemos cuidado prenatal y posparto, bien mujer exámenes, pruebas de PAP, exámenes de mama, planificación familiar, consejería de salud mental. También apoyo para adolescentes, el embarazo y posparto, menopausia y también el abuso doméstico. Por favor, llámenos o haga una cita en línea. Nuestra dirección es 724 La Buena Vista Drive en Wimberley, Texas. Nuestro teléfono 512-256-3696 y también en el internet www.hcwhc.org. Cuando nos viene a buscar, busque la puerta azul.
And we're back with you, Kathy.
And I love that you came wearing a Head Start t-shirt.
Yes, I thank you. I'm very proud of the Head Start program. I've given a lot to it, but I believe in that in this program 1,000% for sure.
And so tell us a little bit about when you came to Head Start, you know, what your role was and how that has turned into a different role for you now there at Head Start.
Okay, sure. So Head Start is part of, or Head Start originated in 1965 as part of the War on Poverty, and it is tied in with a lot of community actions. So not all Head Start programs are with the community action, but it's very popular, you know, very popular to see the two of them to get a community action to have the Head Start grant. So, I mean, school districts can have Head Start grants. I mean, you know, other nonprofits, but a lot of community actions in the country have a Head Start grant. So like I said, I was a part-time employee in 1992. I was working with the nutrition coordinator at the time, and a lot of nonprofits are constantly operating different grants. Just, you know, that's what it's about. And some of them are temporary grants. And so she was working on some other grants, and it freed up some money to hire her an assistant. And so I got into it, and, you know, it's food service for the children. I mean, we have, at that time we had 5 sites, I believe, and now we have 8, but they have kitchens. So, you know, as my job as nutrition coordinator, I manage the kitchens, write the menus, work with those kitchen staff. But then we also do a lot of parent education. So a big part of Head Start is educating our parents. I mean, we're taking the most vulnerable families Head Start originally was just an 8-week program, so that those children would be enrolled for 8 weeks in the summer before they started kindergarten, just to give them that little edge. Yeah. or just to like bring them up to where the other kids were coming in with these folks that would just for some whatever reason were vulnerable, and the kids are the ones that, you know, will suffer from it. And starting kindergarten out behind all the other kids is just hard to catch up. Mm-hmm. So that was a, you know, big part of Head Start, and it just evolved over the years into becoming a year-round program. So, I mean, now just a little history of Head Start in 96, they started early Head Start. Head Start was originally just 3 to 5, and then with early Head Start, it's now birth to 5. Mm-hmm. And we were in the second wave of the early Head Start grants. So I worked part-time from 92 to 96, and when we were able to get that early Head Start piece of it, then my job, you know, became full-time. So that's been a long time ago. A lot has changed. I think any nonprofit changes with leadership, you know, depending on who is their director, whether it's our agency director, our program director, things will change a little bit about with my responsibilities. But for the most part, I've always been I've been nutrition. I had health for a little bit, and that's where we're tracking children's health exams. I mean, you're really just helping the family know how to make a doctor's appointment, or the importance of making a doctor's appointment and staying on the well child exams, mm-hmm. and the purpose of preventative health care, not to use the emergency room as the doctor. And so that's education is huge. And I think Head Start, because of that, has weathered, as we know, 50 years, almost 60 years now of just different whoever's and the political environment, they've weathered it, you know, not great. There's some times then it wasn't as good as others. Sometimes we're better than others, but it's weathered a lot.
Yeah. And I think when I look back and I think you talk about surviving, because for such a long time when I was growing up, it seemed like, the Head Start program and a lot of community action had a very bad connotation, because it was like, oh, they cater basically to immigrant families and those that come that don't have English as a first language. And so it seemed like there was a big push about the Head Start, because they felt that was that type of program, not geared for everybody. But now you see that it's just...
No,
encompass,
I mean,
a lot of
it
people.
It encompasses everyone. If you are it's an application process. Mm-hmm. So someone has to complete an application, and you get points for different things, whether you're a teen parent or you. Now, if you're homeless, I mean, we can get you through. It's a little bit different process for someone who's homeless. But, you know, anything that you're going through, if you've been in prison, I mean, it's really just to help the folks that have, or the children that have, are most vulnerable. And of course, that's going to be their parents.
So it's going to be considered lower on the poverty level?
Well, they're going to get in quicker if they have all these things that have caused them to be more vulnerable, mm-hmm. whether it's a parent that has a drug or alcohol problem, or who has been in prison, or who's a high school dropout. I mean, all these things are knocks, going to be knocks for that child, or for that parent as well, to find a place to live, or to find a job that pays a livable wage. And that's where the agency comes in, because we do at Community Action, we're not just Head Start is our biggest program. Mm-hmm. Most of our staff work for that part of our agency, but we do also have adult ed. We do have energy assistance.
Was it the window program, weatherization program?
Yes, we had the weatherization program. I'm not too, exact on what we're doing. Like currently, we have the breast cancer and cervical cancer screening.
Yeah. That was what I was going to ask you about.
The weather, because I know that you had funding through the end of this year for the breast cancer screening,
yes.
Right?
Okay. So the funding, you know, again, a lot of these other, like we've had the family planning clinics, a lot of those, you know, were based on state funding. So that has not always worked out in our favor as far as keeping those going consistently. Head Start is federal, so it's a little more consistent with what we're able to do. But the breast cancer one has been a little bit more shaky as far as what we're able to do. We are, you know, now located at the Village. The community action offices are at the Village off Hunter Road. But, I mean, we're still thriving. I mean, you know, I think we are, I think just in general, for Head Start anyway, we are need teachers. Mm-hmm. So we are not able to serve the amount of children that we're funded to serve because just we need teachers. And until some things change as far as paying teachers a little bit more in childcare, that's going to continue to be an issue. So we have the children. I mean, the communities, we have those children that can benefit from our services, but it's just having the staff right now.
And so a lot of people don't know that, I guess, too, programs, they come and they go just depending on the funding. And I know that at one time, people don't know that CARTS used to be run by Community Action Agency.
Oh, I don't even think I knew that. Yeah.
Yeah, at one time, CARTS was run by Community Action. Maybe back in 95, 96, okay. 90, sometime in that area.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was under the Community Action umbrella. But I want to talk to you a little bit about, because you do the nutrition, right? And as we see today that we talk about the inflation and how money doesn't buy you the amount of food that you need and everything has gone up, how do you manage, because you have a budget, so how do you manage, how do you tell a parent that comes in and you talk about nutrition with them, the types of food that they should be giving to their children, or maybe even the foods that you give to the kids that come through the nutrition program there, to balance a balanced diet, because now we have all the issue with the GMOs that we have in the foods, right, which aren't necessarily good for you. So how do you balance all that when we talk about you only get this amount of money, but you know that the things that you buy may not be generally healthy for the kids?
It's a balancing act. Put out there, we are reimbursed. So Head Start, we have the Head Start grant, but Head Start, we are reimbursed from the state. It's under the Child Adult Care Food Program, which is basically, you know, like National School Lunch, but it is for early childhood, birth to five. And so we do get reimbursement for that. So our goal is to get 80% of our cost reimbursed by this program, and then the other 20% can come from our Head Start operating budget. So anytime it goes above that, you know, we got to cut back. So for me, when I'm planning a menu, you definitely aren't going to buy organic this or that. You know, you're going to have to watch how much you're in. But you also, you know, keep in mind, are the kids going to eat it? I mean, these children are 3 years old, and, you know, Head Start does require us to offer them new foods, but also with familiar foods. So, I mean, you take an average 2 or 3 year old. I mean, how many foods, if you count it, how many they've been introduced to or have eaten? It's not very many. And I think I've learned over, you know, the many years that I've been in this job, I've had some interns come in and they want to give them, you know, this whole wheat this and whole wheat that, or these, you know, vegetables that they've never had. I'm like, you know, it's great, but if they don't eat it, it's going in the trash. And that's something we have to balance it out with. Plus, our, you know, we want our teachers do sit down and eat with the children. That's a big Head Start component, is family style dining. And so we want our teachers to enjoy the meal. That's how children learn and enjoy food and learn what's healthy. But to answer your question, as far as like the, I mean, canned goods, you know, it's funny because when I'm looking at costs, canned fruit has really gone up. I mean, it's not that much more. It's actually sometimes more expensive than fresh fruit. Now, fresh fruit, you know, you look at your labor to have to, you know, cut that up, wash it and cut it up, and it takes longer. You know, if you have one person in the kitchen, they may or may not be able to do that every day. So it's balancing that out. I mean, can we have fresh fruit at least half the time, and then can the other half the time? Vegetables, again, cost a little bit more than, you know, rice. Rice is super cheap, you know. And I think, too, what's kind of caused a confusion with food is people looking up things on the internet, and it will change. I mean, I wish I could find this video or this little thing on Facebook that my brother had about, you know, this guy going back in time. Well, it's healthy to eat this now, and he goes back and he comes back, and now it's not healthy. You know, in the 90s, it was all low fat, and then we find out, oh, we need to eat less carbs. And so it does get crazy. I think, too, just to keep going back to what you're asking, I really try to focus on maybe it's a little less processed. I mean, how much process? I mean, we want to try to just eat single item food. I mean, we've got chicken, and that's kids, that's right up their alley. Mm-hmm. They want meat, and then they have some rice and a vegetable and a fruit and their milk. Milk we are required to serve. That's a whole nother debate about should we be forcing milk. Can't really get into that. That's the rules that mm-hmm. if we want to get reimbursed for meals, we got to serve milk. But that is, you know, keeping things simple and keeping it, you know, we do serve some processed foods only because it's cheaper. You're mm-hmm. right. And that's sad because it is cheaper. If I'm talking to a family about, you know, healthier eating, I'm saying, you know, try to stay away from the processed foods. Don't get frustrated. It's not going to be perfect every day. If you take 2 days a week and cook something from scratch, and I say scratch, you know, chicken, rice, vegetable. It doesn't need to be fancy. Planning is a big part to me of, you know, planning out your meals. If you just go to the store and you don't have a list and you're like, what am I going to eat? Yeah. You're probably not going to come out of there with as healthy of meals. I do have a good story when I was meeting with a parent. I mean, my whole thing is cook extra on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then you've got leftovers for the week. And she looked at me and she said, we don't ever have extra. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, cook extra. And she said, I don't think you heard me. You know, we don't ever have extra. Mm-hmm. So I realized then that, you know, I had to change how I was talking things and presenting things to these families because I don't understand a lot of times what they've gone through. I mean, I was, you know, definitely didn't grow up rich or anything, but we always had food. I mean, there was never an issue with that. And sometimes, you know, you have multiple families maybe living together and food is an issue.
Well, and I think a lot of times too, waste, right? Because it's like you say, you don't plan ahead. And so you make this, but maybe it went to waste because you didn't think about buying all these other things to use it up, because that happens to me all the time.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, one night you can have, you know, chicken fajitas, one night, you know, you have quesadillas, but I really, you know, that's kind of my go-to now. Well, when I'm talking to a family, I want to hear a little bit about what they're doing.
Right.
And because if you don't really understand where they're coming from and what they think their issues are, mm-hmm. then it's going to be hard to help them.
Everybody's situation is different.
Yes.
So I think having said that, we'll go into a station break. And
yep. And we're going to be right back with you. You're listening to Raise is here on KZSM 104.1 LP, San Marcos, Texas. And we'll be right back with you after these announcements. And yes, we were talking about one of the services that that they provide. Here you go.
Are you interested in receiving information about a free mammogram to check for breast cancer? Community Action Incorporated can arrange for you to receive a free mammogram through one of our local medical partners. If you do not have medical insurance or live in a low-income household, if you're age 50 or older and need to receive your yearly mammogram, or if you're experiencing breast pain or any other concerning breast symptoms, please call us at 512-392-1161, extension 322 for Spanish or 342 for English, or send us an email at breastcancerservices@communityaction.com. This has been a public service announcement brought to you by Community Action Incorporated of Central Texas and KZSM Community Radio in San Marcos, Texas.
KZSM.org would like to thank the following businesses, organizations, and individuals for underwriting and supporting our broadcasting and 24/7 live streaming programming. Blue Sky Mortgage, Daydream Modeling, Down to Earth Barbecue Sauce, Divine Timing Productions, Fasci, The Hill Country Freethinkers, Modern Day Hemp, The Price Center, The San Marcos Arts Commission, Schmidt Fire and Safety Company, and the and Whitliff Collections at Texas State University. If you, your business, or your organization would like to promote and maintain true community radio in San Marcos and around the world, find the donate button on our webpage, kzsm.org, or email kzsmsanmarcos@gmail.com to underwrite our programming. And again, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, y toda mi gente, my name is Josh, also known as DJ Alpha in the mix, and I am the host of the Latin Energy Show on KZSM San Marcos. I'm inviting everyone to tune in every Thursday evening and join the Latin Energy Party. Here on KZSM.org, we are all about community support. So tune in online or download the KZSM app on your mobile device. Shout outs and requests, make sure to follow and tag us on Facebook at Latin Energy Show KZSM. Tú sabes.
So I want to pick off on where we left off about, you know, you're talking about explaining to the parents, right, about how to be able to provide a meal, you know, starting on Sunday to have those planned out. Do you ever, I think especially now because you've got people from so many different cultural backgrounds, and when you have kids that come in, how hard is it for them to, so say they're at home and they're eating food that comes from, say, a Mexican-American household, and maybe have not had some of the things that they find at Community Action as you serve it. Do you ever have any issues with the children?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we usually, and some, it helps when the parents are a little bit easygoing and they're not too worried about if they don't eat. And you don't want to say, you know, they're not going to starve, okay? But just don't feed them before you bring them. That's one. But, you know, we have a few parents who just will still feed them because they're just so worried, you know. But I think we do, you know, we definitely have that for sure when we, you know, we try to offer those familiar foods to them. Of course, it's not made exactly, you know, we all have enchilada casserole or rice and beans, but the cook probably makes it a little bit different than they eat it at home, so it's not exactly. But for the most part, we get a lot of good, I mean, the good feedback from our parents that they're happy that the kids are trying, are getting exposed to other foods. So that's where I said there's that balance. You know, a lot of, when I was younger, and I see a lot of, they want to just do too many new foods, and then they're just not, it's not going to be successful. But if you just gradually put it in there along with the familiar foods, it, the parents are a little bit happier. And then, you know, in my 20 something years, you know, we have some kids that they just won't eat. I mean, they, and then you find out, you know, they're taking them to McDonald's when they pick them up. I'm like, oh man, you know, they're smart. Those kids are smart. They know they're, you know, you're, but we all, research shows you're not going to win that battle with kids. I mean, bribing them isn't going to work. Ellen Satter always had a lot of good advice, and she's written several books on children and eating. You know, you as adults, we decide what they're going to eat and when they're going to eat, and they decide if and how much, mm-hmm. you know, because you're not going to win that battle. I mean, you make those decisions and then let them make those the other decisions, you know, if they do and how much they eat. And just, you know, in a family style meal environment, usually kids are going to eat better and they're passing the bowl. You know, a lot of daycares, you know, child development programs don't have that. I mean, it's very hard, a mom and pop daycare, to be able to provide these things. I mean, it's just, people aren't getting rich in daycare, mm-hmm. for sure. And with these, you know, federal programs, at least, you know, I feel good about being able to offer this in our community, that our children can go through a program like this, or like at Texas State. Texas State has they have a very similar family meal style program like we do. And the children, and, you know, we kind of got away from family style eating during COVID, you know, for obvious reasons. But we're trying to get back into that. And the children, I think, again, yeah, I'll get a few calls. We're about a month into school, and, you know, well, they're just not eating anything. And I'm like, give them a little bit. bit more time. We have a 3-week cycle menu. I do 3 weeks. It's a little bit better cost effective than like a 4 to 6 week. Mm-hmm. When you have so many different menus, you're constantly having to buy something new, whereas a 3-week cycle helps on food cost, but it also helps the children see it over and over. Mm-hmm. So that they're more likely to eat that. So, you're not going to please everybody. I mean, a lot of staff, since they do have to eat, you know, you do deal with, you know, staff comments, but they also understand that, you know, the meals are for the kids. But I've really turned that around. They're just as much for them as they are for the kids. So
what does a meal look like for a child that comes to Head Start?
So we have our meal pattern to follow. So that's put out by the state. You know, the Department of Agriculture and the Child Adult Care Food Program does dictate the meal pattern. So for breakfast, we do need to have a grain, a fruit, and a milk. And so if we have a protein, we can sub it out. If we do, we can sometimes 3 days a week not have to do a grain. That's a new thing. And they have really, over the 25 years I've worked there, tried to adapt the meal pattern to kind of what people are doing. For lunch, it's a protein. You know, we don't always have to have a meat. You know, again, we think
peanut butter.
It can be peanut. Well, we don't serve peanuts, but that's another. Yeah, yeah, but we can do beans or cheese, like grilled cheese sandwiches. Mm-hmm. A meat or meat alternate, two fruits and vegetables. You know, it could be two vegetables, could be two fruits. Generally, we have a fruit and a vegetable. Of course, it's not a dessert. You know, we don't put one food's not more important than the other. They all, you know, have it. They can eat it in whatever order they want to eat it in. We try to tell teachers to leave their eating habits at home and everything they grew up with. Not that they're bad, but sometimes it gets all mixed in. And then a milk and a grain for lunch. And then snack, we have to have two components. So, you know, out of the fruit and vegetable, meat or meat alternate, like yogurt or cheese, and then a grain, we have to have two of those for snack.
So, you know, you've been here for quite some time, and, you know, you're watching the kids, you're watching what they're eating. What do kids nowadays, from the things that you're serving them, what do they like to eat? What are the things they like to eat the most?
Oh, well, I don't think much has changed with spaghetti. I don't know what it is. You know, they love spaghetti. I don't think there's any way we could not make rice, that they love rice. So we do a rainbow chicken and rice now, you know, with carrots and peas and some bell peppers, and they are eating it pretty well. You know, again, they've got to get used to seeing those little pieces of vegetables.
So when we say rice, we say white rice. We're talking about white rice.
Well, we do all kind of rice. We do Mexican rice. We do like a Cuban rice. It's a yellow rice. Mm-hmm. We do just white rice. They like rice pretty much any way you put out there. They do vegetable wise. You know, a lot of them get used to broccoli. They don't like it at first if they have it at home. A salad, they actually, you know, eat salad pretty well. Of course, most kids will eat most fruit. Mm-hmm. Every now and then you're going to have that one exception of a child that just doesn't like fruit, or they don't like, you know, they might like, you know, peaches but not blueberries. But we do pears and peaches and blueberries and watermelon and cantaloupe. Again, I try to make it manageable for the kitchen staff so they're not, you know, cutting up a watermelon.
Yeah.
I had a fight with the watermelon. It's slipping around, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, and you're also trying to hurry and get the wash
messy,
the dishes.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I'm proud to say I've not lost any kitchen staff in 2 years. And so it's part of the job is keeping it manageable for them.
Yeah. And then you have to deal with the rind. It's heavy. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. So, but for the most part, all kids love fruit. Milk, you know, I do see not many kids drinking milk the way, I just don't think we're forcing it, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But from 20 something years ago, I do think, you know, it was, our parents were forcing their kids to drink milk. I don't think that, and even doctors are, you know, we'll get an allergy note or intolerance note for a child that's saying, you know, give them water. It's yeah. fine. They're going to be fine. They're getting what they need yeah. without it.
Well, and I read somewhere last week that now the studies are coming that they're saying that milk isn't necessarily a good thing.
I mean, that's what gets people like pulling their hair out. Like, oh my God, we grew up thinking that this had to be it. And I'm waiting to see what else is going to come out that we thought was, you know, that had to happen.
Well, this segment that we have on Mothering Earth on Tuesday mornings at 11 o'clock this month is talking about dairy products and how it's not necessarily good for you, and it's not good for the environment, is where they were coming out.
No, I mean, there's a big part of the planet that doesn't drink, that doesn't mm-hmm. consume dairy products, and they're fine. Now, that's saying it, lightly, or, not without a lot of research backing that up. But, I mean, I think it's there to show that we don't initially have to have it. So it's hard. I mean, that's a whole nother,
Just drinking the water, though. I like what you said there, because I think that goes... That's the easiest thing. You don't have to have sugared water. You don't have to have colored. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have anything. If you can get the kids just used to drinking water right off the bat, I think that's the better way to go.
Yeah, my hands are tied most of the time with that, because in order for that meal to be reimbursable, we have to offer milk, or like an alternative. It could be soy milk, but people have soy is a common allergen, so I'm not going to force soy on anyone. They do a new milk now. It's a pea protein. And so I've not seen that one too much. But I've usually, if we have a doctor's note, we can accommodate that child. So if they said to offer that child water, juice, we try to stay away from just so much sugar in it. We do serve it once in our 3-week cycle. Just it is, again, it's the balancing act for the kitchen staff. It's a day they don't. They can get that breakfast out a little quicker, but I don't want to substitute milk with juice, because that's not the answer.
I remember, when I was a kid growing up in the 70s, and the school lunches, you'd have milk or juice. Mm-hmm. You would have, and there were certain standards that they had.
And cream of wheat was like always, one of the things that they gave you that was a staple, cream of wheat.
I always remember the cooked spinach whenever it came in, and they'd have the plop on the.
Did you eat it?
No. I didn't. And to this day, I finally, as an adult, I got liking fresh spinach, no problem. But I still do not like cooked spinach.
And I do think that's something, just opening your, eyes up to, like, oh, well, you don't have to eat it, cooked. You can eat it fresh.
Yeah, I like it fresh better than I like it cooked.
I mean, I remember eating it, but I was like, I didn't mind it cooked, because that was, but I think that's where, you're in the, from the 60s, you're you need to eat liver. You have to eat liver to be healthy. Yeah. And no, you really don't. But or cooked spinach. You can also, eat it fresh. So I think over time we start realizing, in the 60s it was started, the canned cream mushroom soups went into everything. Mm-hmm. And that is not very good for you.
Yeah.
So, but you just go through cycles on like what is healthiest, what is the easiest way to eat healthy with, spending the least amount of time in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy. I mean, I could talk food all day long and just how it's evolved into where we are now. But I think it's also interesting to look back 2,000 years on what people were eating.
Yeah.
I mean, I love talking about it.
And it was basically mostly just meats. But anyway, we'll go into a station break and then we'll come back.
Be right back with you. And we're talking about food here tonight on Raices. We'll be right back with you.
How many times have you entered San Marcos, saw the Kiwanis sign, and wondered, what do they do? The short answer is many things to improve the community, with a focus on children's programs such as the summer reading program in the library and making scholarships available to graduating seniors. It takes a commitment from the club's members to make this happen. If you're looking for a way to be more involved with your community, try the San Marcos Kiwanis Club. They meet every Thursday at noon at Grin's Restaurant on North LBJ, downtown San Marcos. That's Thursday at noon. Grin's Restaurant. Hope to see you there.
The Rotary Club of San Marcos is sponsoring a Rise Against Hunger food packaging event during World Food Week in October. We need 150 volunteers to pack 15,000 meal packets in 2 hours. Each package serves 6 people, so that's meals for 90,000 people, which will be sent to a famine-plagued area of the world. Locally, we will also be raising money in October for the San Marcos School Fuel Program and the Hays County Food Bank. Join us for this food packaging event during World Food Week on October the 19th from 9 a.m. to noon at the First Lutheran Church in San Marcos. We hope you'll help us take a bite out of hunger, both locally and internationally. For more information and to sign up to volunteer, please visit our webpage at events.riseupagainsthunger.org/Rotary Club San Marcos 2024.
We're back with you here in the studio, and for the last 15-minute segment here on Rises. Time flies.
It goes by really, really fast. So I want to talk to you about your venture that you have now with this nutty cucumber. Yeah. And I remember seeing the very first one that you posted, and I thought, oh, let me read this. And so I read it, and now that you're continuously posting, I'm just like waiting for it to come out. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about your endeavor with the nutty cucumber.
Okay, well, the nutty cucumber was born in 2018. I had been at Community Action for 1996 to 2018, 22 years, and I decided at 55 I'm going to try something different. I wanted to try to start my own business, a food prep business, because I have all the, you know, just different from what I'd been doing. I think you just go through that. Like if I'm going to do it, I need to do it now. I think, man, what was I thinking? But so I did start a meal prep business, and one of the things I offered was a lot of good salads that had meat and grain and vegetables, but they always had nuts on them because nuts make everything better. And cucumber. So like, what am I going to be called? I was Meals by Melinda. I'm like, I got to think of something a little better. I mean, the crazy carrot was a little, I didn't like the word crazy. So the nutty cucumber is what it was. And so that was March of 2020. So I was hitting 100 meals a week, you know, in my home. Everyone knew I was preparing them in my home, but the idea was to move into, you know, find a commercial kitchen to rent. And of course, March 2020 was a bad month, and it just never could, I could never get it back. So it just kind of went on hold, or I would try to do it every other week. I worked at the hospital in their dietary department, and then I ended up at Embassy Suites here in town. And I was actually in their HR department, just kind of filling in as we were reopening the hotel back up. But I spent a lot of time in their kitchen. So really had, you know, good understanding of cooking for children, cooking for, you know, patients in the hospital, and then cooking for, you know, guests at Embassy Suites. And but it just, you know, it just came about that it was just better. I got the opportunity to go back to Community Action. Head Start's always just been, I've been very passionate. So, and financially, you know, you got to make those choices, mm-hmm. that it's just a better deal for me. But I didn't want the nutty cucumber to die. You know, like I just really enjoyed, you know, talking about it. And so I just decided, you know, I want to eat at every restaurant in San Marcos. How long would that take me? And how many are there? So I went to the Visit San Marcos website, and I think they list about 180, but they don't have them all. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm talking like every eatery, you know, minus food trucks or eateries that are located in another business, you know, like the Outlet Mall or Texas State, or like in Target, you know, I'm not counting those, but there's, I would say, close to 225, 250 eateries in San Marcos. Wow. Bar, you know, that's a little gray area. I'm kind of making the rules up as I go, but it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And
So you keep, let's say, for instance, over at Showdown, the grill that they have there doesn't necessarily count.
So I'm counting Showdown. I have a funny story about Showdown. I used to work there in the 80s, yeah. And my mom said, "Where'd you get a job?" Well, I wasn't going to tell her that I was working at Showdown. I said, "Well, I'm working at a cute little sandwich shop." And my friends are going, "What if she comes to visit you?" I'm like, "She's not. Hopefully she's not." But they make, I have not gone to, I'm waiting for Showdown because we didn't serve burgers at the time, but now they serve probably, a lot of people would say, the best burger in town.
We were there at Showdown, what, about 2 months ago for a mm-hmm. burger? Yeah.
I love, they've got a honey BLT that I like there along with the, but the one that I always get is the hash browns that are smothered with everything.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
It's believe me, the oil is off the chart on that one, but yeah. I can still, I just have to watch it. The sugars with my diabetes, it's not too bad.
Yeah, they have some good, and they do it in a very very small area. So that's what I was like with bar, you know, kind of what I'm counting. Is it a bar? Is it a restaurant? Well, is it a bar that serves food? I went to Wino, which is the new wine tasting down, and they have and I just wanted to check it out, you know, and I'm glad I went. The food, they had a little charcuterie board. You could argue, like, that's not really food, but I counted it. So if it's a bar that, you know, has, you know, five or six.
But a lot of people in Europe, that's how they eat, right? Oh, yeah. So you get a charcuterie board like that, and so that's like a meal for them.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah. I mean.
Well, I think that's a lot of it, is that we've got to reset how people think about meals and how they think about how they get their intake. And, you know, that's one thing that over the last 2 years, I've really had to reset my diet and how I eat and, you know, I tend to graze more now. It's more proteins, it's cheeses, you know, it's those different things, and just nuts and, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, I just think we're just out of line on our portion sizes.
Oh, sure.
And we eat, we may eat healthy, but it's just too much. I mean, it just, and for diabetes, that's the worst thing you can do, because you're just, you know, hitting your system with, you know, sugar, you know, it all turns to sugar, and it's too much all at one time. So the little meals, the grazing is actually healthier, you know, just for sugar, for your diabetes purposes, for sure. So you're on the right track there.
But it's a big shift, you know, from what we remember, you know, and you do this with the kids, you're educating them early on. So I think that's a good starting point. You know, you talk about Head Start. There you go. You know, it's getting that change that we've got.
And letting them know that it's okay to say you've had enough. Like, you've already had two servings of this, and then that's it. You've had enough. We're going to have snack in 2 hours. And so, you know, there's other, I think, things that come up with the population that we work with on that. But at the same time, it's, you know, helping people, how do you eat healthier, and the smaller meals. But again, that's just our culture in this country. That's what we've done versus other countries. They eat a little bit different, like you were saying.
Well, and you come from Texas. Everything is bigger and better
in
Texas, right?
I just think, you know, we're from the South. Yeah. I mean, we can't celebrate without food. I mean, that's sometimes it's like, you know, we want to teach children that we don't have to have food to celebrate. I said, well, what do you mean? This is the South. Everything's got food.
Well, and I think especially like for a lot of Hispanic households where every celebration is celebrated, and there's food at every.
And if you don't eat it, you didn't like it? What? That's weird. You're like, no, you're too skinny anyway. You need to eat it. And I'm like the same way now with like my kids. You know, they're trying like, Mom, we just ate. Like, we're full. And I'm like, okay. So I have to keep, you know, step back and remember. But I think a lot of the restaurants that I'm, you know, just hitting up, you know, memories of things, you know, like going to Dairy Queen. I haven't been to Dairy Queen since I was a kid. But my dad, that's the only place he would stop at is Dairy Queen. So a lot of it for me, but it is, we're from the South again. Mm-hmm. You know, we attach emotions to food and to going out to eat.
Your memories, you tie it to these experiences that you had with your dad on these road trips that you went on.
And so it's like, you know, did I really need that dude or that? Yeah, I think that's what I had. But, you know, it was good. I walked out of there feeling happy. And so that's my mission, is I don't know that I'll get to all of them. It is expensive. So,
I think every time I go out to eat, it's north of, you know, $35 tip. You know, so
To get for one person, I mean, $15 to $20.
An average lunch is $15. And I didn't eat out much when I left Community Action, just financially. I'm like, I'm just not going to do it. Plus, I cook. I mean, I'm not going to do it. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm making up for lost time. But at the same time, you know, it is, you know, but I'm getting a coffee here, or just one thing there, you know, just going in and checking out the, you know, the new place. But I haven't went to 666 Social. That's a coffee shop there across from, that's got the gothic like kind of theme.
That's a new one. It's over here on Cheatham Street.
Cheatham. It's across from Patio. Yeah, you gotta go by and get a latte. Okay. I thought it was a really cool vibe in there. And so I don't know, a lot of these, you know, plus it's an ever-changing landscape. You know, they're opening and closing.
Yeah. So that was going to be my next question. Has there been a restaurant that you've been to that has closed down already?
I don't think so. I've started July 11th, and so I've been about 48 restaurants now.
Wow. All right. Well, gal, you know, time sure does fly.
Well, when you're talking about food, you invited me.
Well, you know, I'm glad you stopped by, and, you know, I'd like to have you come back to the show, you know, when we have a little bit more time and we can talk a little bit more in-depth about community action, how it's changed, and, you know, what the vision is as we move forward. And I have a lot of really, really fond memories of the ladies that worked at Community Action. And
well, thank you for serving on our board, too. I know that we don't always get folks that are willing to do that.
You know, I think probably, you know, I had a lot of fun serving on that board, and I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And it was an eye-opener for someone who never really looked at poverty the way that I did after I came to Community Action.
Yeah. No, it's not always pretty what we're doing, but it's in my mind, you know, it's a must that we continue the mission. Yeah.
Well, thank you for stopping by.
Of course. I enjoyed it.
It's
I
been
really
a pleasure.
Did. Yeah.